Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number three, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, talking the big matchup this Sunday between the Titans and the Houston Texans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our friend Aaron Reese from The Athletic, who covers the Houston Texans. Aaron, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going?
Absolutely doing well. And Aaron, it's been interesting to watch the Texans the past couple weeks. Obviously, a lot of turnover. Bill O'Brien being fired, Romeo Crennel taking over on an interim basis. What's the reaction been like in Houston since the firing of Bill O'Brien?
People are pretty excited about it. You know, I think fans were pretty apathetic to what the team was at this point. And just kind of felt like, you know, O'Brien had been empowered so much that they weren't going to get rid of him anytime soon. And yet they kind of knew what their ceiling was with this guy. And so I think people are excited about the possibility that they find a coach who really maximizes Deshaun Watson's skill set. And if nothing else, that they got out from under someone who, you know, was clearly kind of a bit behind in terms of figuring out how to be a general manager in this league and was diminishing the team's future resources and ability to compete in the future as a result.
So before we get into this matchup, who's it going to be, Aaron? Who's you're making this choice, bringing a head coach for the future to maximize Deshaun Watson? Who are you picking?
I think I would want Eric Bieniemy. He has obviously experience working with a young superstar quarterback. He is, you know, we talk about kind of wanting the offense to be more innovative. He works for one of the most innovative offensive coaches in the league under Andy Reid. So I think he would make a lot of sense. If he turned me down, I think my second choice would be Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator at Buffalo, who obviously knows how to get the most out of his quarterback. Josh Allen is not as good as Deshaun Watson, but I think is performing better this season than Deshaun Watson. So I think he'd be good too, and he has a connection to Jack Easterby, the Texans interim GM / executive vice president of football operations. They both overlapped in New England at one point in time, so he'd be my other choice.
Aaron Reese from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Aaron, what do you make of this matchup on Sunday between the Texans and the Titans? Obviously, the Titans have been the story of the league the past couple of weeks with the COVID-19 outbreak. They get a big win against Buffalo on Tuesday. How do you view this matchup from a Texans standpoint?
I view Derrick Henry as a huge, huge problem. You know, I mean, the Texans are coming off their best performance against the run this year. They led the Jags rookie running back, whose name escapes me now, Dylan Thompson, is that right? It's 3.6 yards per carry, which is was pretty good for them. But, you know, they generally have been really gashed on the ground this season. And when I saw that Derrick Henry stiff arm against Buffalo, I felt like, oh, man, this is not gonna be good. I think they're going to have their way kind of with them on the ground, which is obviously pretty problematic. So the big thing is if they're going to let them kind of – Derrick Henry's going to run all over them. The only way the Texans, I think, can really stay in it, stay competitive, is if they don't get off to a slow start. Offensively, and that has been an issue for this team. You know, last week they, for the first time this season, didn't go three and out on their opening possession. They connected with Brandon Cooks for like a 36-yard pass, and then they went three and out on the next set of downs. So I mean, they have issues in first quarters for sure, and I don't think that's something they can really afford when they're going against a team that is this good running the ball and when they're that bad stopping the run.
So I think we can all agree on Bill O'Brien as a GM. I think not as easy to just completely dismiss him as a coach, I would say. But, Aaron, other than playing the Jaguars, which is probably going to help a lot of teams, was anything any discernible difference to you in how the team came out, played, you know, in any way under Romeo Crennel last week? Like, was there a bump, do you think?
I think definitely when you just were talking to players, they seemed so much more kind of enthusiastic and like relieved almost. You know, Deshaun Watson, he had before publicly kind of backed O'Brien, but you know, I mean, when he's talking about the offense and the faith he has in the offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, who had been calling the plays and stopped because O'Brien took the privilege away from him, I mean, you know, he seems like excited to just get to work with one guy and kind of have a clearer picture of what was going on. And J.J. Watt, you know, he'd been kind of just seemed like he'd been hit by a bus after all their Zooms after every loss, you know. So I think he's relieved to kind of be doing something different. Obviously, you know, it's been reported, you know, how he got in an argument with O'Brien at practice for the Steelers game. So I think the players are relieved. But, you know, I look at that game and I think a lot of it is more just kind of it was the matchup. You know, the Jags are a terrible defense. The Texans, if they're going to win games, they're going to win in shootouts. That's kind of what the offense is built on. So they were able to get a lot of explosive plays. Brandon Cooks, who had gotten off to a slow start, had a really, really good game. And then they got a little bit lucky on defense. This is a team that hadn't had any takeaways the first four games. Their first one is basically gifted to them by a fumbled halfback pass out of a wildcat formation near the goal line, and then they forced another fumble later. So, I mean, I think it was a combination of them being happy, but also a really good matchup, and finally having some luck break their way on the turnovers, and also the Jags missed a couple pretty easy field goals.
Aaron, as you look through the first five games for the Texans, how would you rate the way that Deshaun Watson has played so far without DeAndre Hopkins?
Oh man, I mean, I guess if like 10 is the best version of him and one is the worst, and let's say last year he played at an 8, I would say this year he's playing at like a 7 or like a 6.5 or something like that. I mean, he has definitely taken a step back, to be honest, the step back is a bit larger than I anticipated it would be. But I think the issue is that, you know, he is a guy who kind of he loves to have time to improvise and whatnot. And when the plays did break down, he always kind of could look to the same person. You know, he could always look to DeAndre Hopkins. And when he did have quick throws, it was often to DeAndre Hopkins, someone who he could trust to kind of win outside the numbers, one-on-one, with like a little comeback route or an out or anything like that, like that 5 to 12-yard range. And he just doesn't really have that sort of possession receiver at all this year. I mean, the guys he has in this receiving corps are really fast. They can stretch the field, but they cannot win like that. So I think that's been an issue for him. And then I've been surprised by kind of just the lack of answers he has, or the offense has in general when blitzed. You know, he's getting hit a lot more, not quite as much as he was in 2018, but for a little while that was the case. And that was surprising to me. And I think some of that's on the line's performance and regression, but I think some of that is on the quarterback to kind of make sure they're in the right play, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, I just think back to that game here last year. I mean, basically it came down to those two guys. The Titans just couldn't stop them. Watson to Hopkins in the fourth quarter of that game. And like you said, Aaron, it's just he always knew he had him if he needed 8 yards or whatever it was, and he would probably win. But I do look at the speed you mentioned. I mean, Will Fuller and his availability has certainly been correlated to Texans' success, and to a fair amount in recent years, right? And like you said, now Cooks has this breakout game. Do you feel like at least moving forward this offense – has figured some things out to get into a lot of those shootouts and maybe win some of them?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Brandon Cooks, he was in and out of camp with a quad injury that also put him on the injury report for the first 3 weeks. So I think he was a little bit limited in terms of how many reps he was getting with Watson. Obviously, the offseason prevented him from getting together as they normally would as well. And then the line, too, is kind of, I think, coming back towards the level where we maybe anticipated. The first couple weeks, they ranked last, and then I think 31st in ESPN's pass block win rate, which measures how often the line can hold its blocks for 2.5 seconds. And now I think I looked yesterday, they're up to 14th. Last year, they finished 8th. So, you know, they are kind of getting back to where I think we expected them to be. You combine that with him clicking with his receivers a little more. I think those are positive trends for the offense. My big question is, like, you know, is David Johnson ever going to really get off the ground? People here who kind of want to be optimistic are looking at the fact he had 17 yards or 96 yards and 17 carries last week and are like, it's clicking for him too. But it's really not. I mean, he had a 29-yard run out of the game that was kind of meaningless. He's just not very consistent or successful on first down. And so that obviously messes up the whole offense because they're behind the sticks a lot. And I think that's also been a reason that Deshaun Watson is still getting hit quite a bit.
What is J.J. Watt now as a player, Aaron? And I know Zach Cunningham is a guy who has emerged there, but who else on that defense, you know, should concern the Titans Sunday?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they've kind of had J.J. Watt is, I think, I think he is. Last year, he was still elite when he was playing. You know, he was. I think despite only playing in half the games during the regular season, he still was one. I think he led all players or tied with the lead. I saw this on PFF for games with at least 10 pressures, and so he was really good when he was playing. He's not quite to that sort of level this season. But again, I don't know quite how much you can base his stats off of the fact that the nature of the games they're playing in early on and the blowouts and stuff. But I would say he's not quite the same player with last year. He's still very good, but they need other guys to step up around him. And they've had, you know, different people kind of do it every week. Charles Omenihu, a second year defensive lineman, has gotten some production. Jacob Martin, a rotational edge rusher they got in the Clowney trade a couple of years ago. He was pretty good for them last year. He's been better this year. And Whitney Merciless, who his contract looked brutal for the first three games when he wasn't doing anything. But now the past two games, he has two sacks and a covered fumble. So he's kind of clicking again. So, you know, their pass rush, honestly, has been better than I anticipated. They don't necessarily get a lot of consistent pressure, but their new defensive coordinator, Anthony Weaver, I think he's done a pretty good job of scheming up pressure and knowing kind of when to call blitzes and stuff. So it's a pretty blitz-heavy team, and they've been able to get the quarterback and create negative plays more often than I anticipated.
Aaron Reese covers the Texans for The Athletic, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. Aaron, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it. Looking forward to the game on Sunday.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. It is going to be interesting, Joe, to see the Titans from a defensive standpoint. I look at that matchup and I look at what happens in the secondary, especially when the injury report came out yesterday for the Titans and they're dealing with all of these, you know, muscle injuries, whether it's a hamstring or a quad. There are some challenges that I think are presented there in the secondary by the Houston speed at wide receiver that could be a problem for the Titans. And we'll get into that a little bit more in the next segment. Also, take your reaction as well. How concerned are you about the Texans game coming off a short week for the Titans? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 1025, The Game.
He praised you for your preparation, your hard work, but then also your motivational skills. What type of impact did he have on you as far as pressing that button for you as a player?
Yeah, that's actually, you know, a good point, a great point, a great question, because I was a player when I got to New England. I had never started a game in Pittsburgh, and so I had this burden of trying to be perfect on each and every play and say that I'm never going to make a mental error. Everything was going to be exactly right and try to make up for whatever talent gap that I had maybe. And so I would press, or I'd, you know, if I'd make a mistake, I'd carry it with me. And, you know, I remember, I think it was Atlanta and something happened and, you know, he came over, he's like, you can't function like that. And, you know, in life or in this game, especially, you can't just let it, you know, eat at you because you made the wrong check or you did the wrong assignment. And, you know, it was great. It was always a great, you know, relationship, you know, to this day, check on him and Rosemary and, you know, their family and their kids and their grandkids. And, you know, he's been one of those mentors when I talk about my coaching career, my playing career, that you make stops along the way, that, you know, you have people have a positive impact on your life. I would say that Romeo Crennel is certainly one of those people.
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday talking about the impact that Romeo Crennel has had on his career, both as a player and as a coach. And, Joe, you brought it up earlier. A lot of mutual respect, I think, between Crennel and Mike Vrabel here heading into this game.
Great answer, by the way, by Mike Vrabel there. See? It's possible when you ask good questions like TD does. But that was interesting.
Got to step your question game up a little bit.
Apparently. But, yeah, that was interesting. The idea of kind of, you know, Vrabel goes to Pittsburgh as a player and is a special teams guy there. And really, you know, it's interesting. When he got hired here, I did a story and talked to his wife for quite a while about this. I mean, they really were – not sure he'd be in the league much longer. You know, it really was a year-by-year training camp, or, you know, waiting for the call type situation. And then he gets this opportunity in New England, and clearly Romeo Crennel kind of helped him figure out that you got to be able to make some mistakes and cut loose and play. And obviously he had a great career from there. I mean, he's a Patriots, at least, Hall of Famer player.
Yeah.
Right? I mean – you talk about the championships and, you know, catching TDs and Super Bowls, and then what he was as a linebacker, as a, you know, front seven guy. So, yeah, that's a lot of respect between those guys here. I mean, same thing with Vrabel and Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien lured him from Ohio State to come coach in the NFL. But this is these are two guys who have a major history here Sunday.
And this matchup to me, Joe, is very interesting on Sunday. Look, the Titans fans, they're riding high right now. Very few expected the Titans to come out and look the way they did against the Bills in that win on Tuesday night. And I look at this game, and the Texans are 1-4. They've underachieved to this point in the year. The first two games notwithstanding, I mean, that's going to be tough for anybody going up against the Chiefs and the Ravens.
And then at the Steelers.
But, you know, probably a game against the Vikings. You feel like you're the Texans, you need to win. They don't get it done. They finally get on the board against Jacksonville this past week. But it's an interesting week to me from this vantage point. There's a couple of different matchups that if I'm the Titans, I don't really like. And I was trying to figure out in the break, like, have the Titans really gone up against a team yet that just has some burners at the receiving position? You think about Will Fuller, you think about Brandon Cooks, you think about Kenny Stills, like the different guys that they've got available to them for the Texans. Like, have the Titans played against a team like that? Because, you know, John Brown not being able to go for the Bills the other night, that's a big deal. I mean, he's a really fast guy. He's a guy that could change the game at any moment. And I'm looking back, I mean, Justin Jefferson, I guess, is probably the best example against Minnesota.
Yeah.
We saw how that went for the Titans. This matchup would concern me from a speed standpoint, especially when you combine everything I just said with the injury report that came out with the Titans yesterday. A lot of people in the secondary dealing with some nagging injuries right now.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting at practice today, for one, to see who's out there and see the injury report after an actual practice. But, you know, you're right. I mean, Jerry Jeudy is a fast guy. He's not Ruggs fast, but he's fast, and he did some good things. Chenault for Jacksonville, they did some nice things with him and gave the Titans problems. I mean, the Titans pass defense, between the lack of pass rush and then how banged up they've been, especially at corner, they're vulnerable. And how vulnerable will they be? Now, Christian Fulton comes off the COVID list, and I would presume right now that he would be available Sunday, and that's big.
Yeah.
A guy who can run. They need more guys who can run in that secondary. We don't know when Adoree Jackson will be back. Malcolm Butler coming off a great game, man. You make those plays. You know, that's what it's about, make plays. Malcolm Butler, he got beat by Justin Jefferson a few times in that game, right? So it's not like it's been perfect. It never will be for him. But he is a guy who plays physically against receivers and makes his share of plays. And he's a pretty good guy to have out there. But Jonathan Joseph has been exploited. They also, the other night, I mean, the way they played that game, they dropped guys a lot in that game. And in a couple of those zone looks, they got big plays from Joseph and Chris Jackson. So what's the plan against this team? It's probably a lot of that too, because how much man do you really feel good about playing against these guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the other part that I wonder about, and look, we've talked about kind of the weirdness of discussing, you know, the outbreak with COVID-19 and that being like a rallying cry or a motivating factor for the Titans. But there's no question that it was to some degree against the Bills. They were coming out with their hair on fire in that game, looking to send a message. I wonder if there's a bit of an emotional drop from that game to this game against Houston. And that's not maybe something that is intentional, but it's just like a human thing. Sometimes that just happens.
Well, even if you just separate out the COVID stuff, which the Titans should, you know, that's over here. Put that in one compartment, come over here, and, you know, it's football stuff. But even if you do, I mean, you're talking about just the psychology of everyone thinks you're going to get drubbed by a 4-0 team, right? Versus, and plus, you know, it's a primetime game that everybody's watching. Now you go to, everyone expects you to drub this 1-4 team on a noon kick on a Sunday, and you've had a short week to prepare. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think this could be closer than I think a lot of people probably do think.
That was nice.
You like that?
A lot of thanks going on there.
A lot of thinking. Thinking cap on.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in, there's been a lot of talk about Arthur Smith maybe being a head coach next year. Not all coordinators become good head coaches, but I do think he would make a great head coach. Where do you think he could go if that's something he wants to do? And who do you think would be good to take his place here as offensive coordinator? I don't want to get into who could take his place here as offensive coordinator yet because I want to wait and see what happens first. But it's interesting with the Texans' job being open. We've talked about Eric Bieniemy. They brought up Brian. I think Aaron Reese brought up Brian Daboll in the last segment.
Yep.
Could Arthur Smith be a guy that the Texans could be interested in to come in and be a head coach? That conversation, not specifically with the Texans, but as more and more openings around the league take place, Arthur Smith, I think, is a guy that's going to generate a lot of discussion on that front.
I agree. Yeah, and yeah, that could be. And by the way, you are absolutely right, Robbie, that we shouldn't speculate on the replacement for someone who's still here. But I will tell you that Jared Stillman is already planning for Bill O'Brien to be the Titans OC next
okay.
year. So there you go. And actually, I will say, I hadn't thought of it, and I was like, gosh.
That's really not a bad idea.
And if that's the case, I very much look forward to Taylor Lewan greeting Bill O'Brien with a big hug after the tweets he sent out about Bill O'Brien.
I was just kidding, buddy. It's like Jarrell Casey and Blake Bortles being teammates.
Did you see the tweets by the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, by the way?
Yes, I did.
It's what was that movie? You saw the one with the bar fight?
Oh yeah.
What was that movie? It was
I can't remember the movie.
It was a mafia movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was pretty funny with little PK in there too. That was pretty funny. The chat was funny yesterday too.
Yeah, chat was pretty good yesterday.
I gave you guys a little slice of that.
Insider info.
It's getting a little feisty among Titans media right now. Probably just everybody mad that I'm 5-0 in the Titans Media League. That's probably the
root
cause.
How many times
per
show are you going to brag about that?
This is my I'm going to use my platform in a responsible way to and hopefully to educate and entertain people and inform them that I'm 5-0 in the Titans Media League in fantasy football. I think it's really important that the public knows this.
Well, in what way are you educating the public about that?
I think it's very important. I think also people should know that Buck Rising is 0-5. But, you know, listen, we don't have a full segment on my Titans Media League fantasy football team on the show, but if you guys would like to add it, I'm certainly open to that idea.
We'll see if we can't put that in there at some point for you. Maybe a day when you're not here. Maybe that'll work.
Yeah, well, that's true. You guys are welcome to analyze and talk about my team when I'm not here, too. I give you full rights to that.
Kim tweets in and says, don't put Arthur on the head coaching stuff out there. He can't leave us. I think Titans fans would be very sad to see Arthur Smith go.
Yeah, you know what? Listen, here's the thing. If he does go, like if you knew right now that you're going to lose Arthur Smith, you also should know that it's probably going to go well from here. Not necessarily
this season.
Yeah, like not necessarily as well as you may want. Doesn't necessarily mean like they don't have to win the Super Bowl for him to get another job. But if he does get another job, it probably means that this offense is going to keep scoring big points and and he's going to – I mean, think about Matt LaFleur getting hired away after one okay year as OC. Yeah, I think – and I do think Arthur Smith, before we knew what he was as a play caller, because that was going into last year, okay, this guy's impressive. He's moved up. Obviously, Vrabel trusts him. But what is he as a play caller? You don't know. But even at that point, it was obvious in the building on the staff he was a good coach. You know, he was a good coach for the tight ends. He stood out on the field. So he's got – he's got a lot going for him, and he probably will be somewhere next year.
When we come back, an interesting matchup in the SEC this weekend between the Vols and the Kentucky Wildcats. We'll see if the Vols can rebound after a tough loss to Georgia. Kyle Tucker from The Athletic will join us to discuss that and the Titans as well. He's a multifaceted man. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Marquise Munson taking you through this Thursday morning. It's an interesting matchup this weekend in the SEC between Kentucky and Tennessee. And to help us talk a little bit more about that and the Titans as well, we bring in our good friend Kyle Tucker from The Athletic on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kyle, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well. And I look at this matchup, Kyle, for the Vols this weekend against Kentucky. And Kentucky's interesting to me because they could very easily be 3-0 this season. They're 1-2. I've had some tough breaks from both the officiating and some self-inflicted wounds go against them in their first couple of games. What do you make of their performance so far, and what do you make of this matchup for Kentucky against Tennessee?
Yeah, it is really interesting. You know, if they have any one of like five or six sort of disastrous things go right instead of going wrong for them in the Ole Miss game, they win that one. They missed an extra point in overtime, had a couple of other sort of mishaps in that game. And in the Auburn game, you know, they opened the season at Auburn. They pretty well controlled the first half, and they're going in to score a touchdown right before halftime. And it looks for all the world like he got in. And they, as it seems to happen way too often, took a bunch of time to review it and still got it wrong. Next play, they throw an interception. So that kind of changed the complexion of that game. I think they were going to go into halftime and in control of that game. And so, you know, you're right. They're not really far off from feeling great about their situation. I think they're a good team. You know, I thought going into the year, this was probably the deepest and most overall talented team Stoops has had. You know, and may turn out to be wrong about that, but I still think that this is a very good team, especially by you know, historical Kentucky standards. They're coming off 18 wins the last 2 years, and have a bunch of the core of those guys back, and so. I think there'll be a challenge to just about everybody to play.
So what is it about Tennessee and Kentucky, Kyle? I could probably wipe away a lot of the history and just say Tennessee was just, you know, much stronger program over the years. But I do think back to 2 years ago, I was pretty stunned by what I saw that day in Neyland Stadium. And even last year, Tennessee has all kind of quarterback issues going on, and finally Garantano gets the job back, and that's a close game. But what is it about Tennessee and Kentucky, that matchup, that seems to be a problem for the Wildcats?
Yeah, you know, I really do think sometimes that there's a psychology that gets involved in some of these, you know, long, you know, futile pursuits, you know, against one team. I mean, they had that forever against Florida.
Right.
And it's really crazy. Some of the, you know, in some of the Florida situations, again, just in the more modern history under Stoops, where they're right there and something crazy happens. You know, they were at Florida Stoops' second year and had a chance. They were in overtime and should have won in the first overtime, and an official didn't see a play clock run out, and Florida throws a touchdown and ends up beating them. You know, a couple years ago, before they actually ended the Florida streak, they're at home and they're up, you know, two scores with a few minutes to go in the fourth quarter against Florida, and they leave a wide receiver uncovered and they blow that game, and they get a holding penalty on what would have been a game-winning field goal drive. In Tennessee, there's been some of that too, but not like often not close calls. It's just like total embarrassment, like you mentioned 2 years ago. The best team they've had at Kentucky in 40 years just gets totally embarrassed. Sometimes it starts to get in your head that you just, you know, all that history. I mean, players aren't thinking about 30 years ago, but if they've lost every year of their career to Tennessee, I think it kind of gets in their minds. The other thing about that game 2 years ago, though, was I think like a massive letdown for Kentucky, because the week before they had improbably been in a de facto SEC semifinal against Georgia. They had a Georgia come to their place, win that game, and they win the East. And they didn't play well, and they lost. And I think at that point it was like everything we were angling for this season is kind of gone. And I don't think they came out very, very focused in the next game against Tennessee. Probably overlooked Tennessee, which is an insane thing to do when you never beat them.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kyle, so if Kentucky's going to win this game against Tennessee, what is the formula for them doing so?
Well, run the ball, which, you know, they didn't. They've had a couple of really strange weeks in a row. They rushed for 400 and something yards and lose a game against Ole Miss. Very hard to run for 400 yards and six touchdowns and lose. And then the next week they have about 170 total yards of offense and win against a Mike Leach offense, which they completely shut down. They intercepted Mississippi State six times last week. And they had no interceptions the first 2 weeks. Their secondary looked awful for the first 2 weeks and then looked terrific last week. So I think run the ball, and then the reason that Kentucky was so effective against the passing game of Mississippi State last week it wasn't as much about the defensive backs to me as it was they were able to get a great pass rush without blitzing. Three and four man pass rush, getting home on the quarterback, making a lot of hurried decisions. And I think that's kind of those are my two keys there. I mean, I know that there's a lot of eyes on Tennessee's offensive line now after, 2 weeks ago, all the hype in the world, and last week beat like a drum by admittedly probably the best defense in the country. But I think, if you're Kentucky, you're watching that and thinking if we can get to Garantano, we can make him make mistakes. And I think that's probably everybody looks at the matchup with Tennessee and that quarterback that way as well.
All right, now I'm on a pivot. I want to pivot you, Kyle, your various duties at The Athletic. You were sitting next to me with a nice glass partition, or maybe it was plastic, at the Nissan Stadium press box the other night, and one of the things you said that stuck with me, I've already mentioned it a couple times on the show, because even though it may not be time to write this, if we can talk about my fantasy football team on the show, we can talk about this on the show. You mentioned Ryan Tannehill. Why is no one talking about him for MVP? Of course, it's early to talk about anyone, really, but make the case for me right now.
Well, I mean, he's the quarterback of an undefeated team who has made every big play. They start the season with three games that go down to a game-winning field goal. He's made really all the clutch plays you would want a quarterback to make. He's got this sort of signature moment in the second week where he gets destroyed by a Pro Bowl Josh Allen, the other Josh Allen, and stands in there and throws a strike, and everybody, what do you call it, and one. That's pretty awesome.
That's right.
They come out in this moment of great uncertainty, and he's the thing I kept writing about him the first few weeks is like he's the steadiest, sturdiest like guy you would want to have in that situation. He seems to not get too high or low, and I think the team sort of responds to that. And then the ultimate example is he comes out in the pandemic games on Tuesday night, a game they weren't supposed to win, and they roll. And a lot of that was the way he played. And so now he's got 10 total touchdowns, one interception, as the quarterback of one of four undefeated teams in the NFL. And if you want to extend it back and just sort of, because I think all these awards, it's not in a vacuum. People sort of stack up what their perception of a player over time. Well, if we're talking about that, in 14 games as a Titans starter, he's got 31 touchdowns and six interceptions. I think he's a guy who's certainly trending in a direction that you have to talk about him at some point down the road. Do I think he's like a real contender? Do I think he can win the MVP? It would probably take him really jumping up there and putting up some numbers some week. But should he be on the, if we're doing a list of, five or six MVP candidates through 5 weeks of the NFL, should he be on it? It feels like maybe.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Kyle, obviously a big win for the Titans against the Bills. Moving ahead to this Sunday, a quick turnaround. How do you view this matchup for the Titans against the Texans?
Well, yesterday's sort of hypothetical injury list was, I don't know if alarming is the right word.
It was ample.
Much more telling. Yeah, it was big. It's kind of exactly what you'd expect, right, from a game where you have a two-week layoff and 2 days of practice, only one of which was even close to a real practice. And then you run out there and play a real physical game. It didn't look like it at times against Buffalo. And then turn around, 5 days later and you don't have to play a game. That's a little worrisome. The penalty, the on-field penalty you're going to pay, you would expect the team to pay for what Tennessee just went through. It may be the second game that they pay that penalty. Having to turn around now and play in a short week and a bunch of guys got banged up in that game, that's the thing I'll be most interested in seeing. Like, how much can this team now line up and play a slobber knocker of an NFL game 5 days after doing the sort of unthinkable with a bunch of guys getting beat up in it.
Kyle Tucker from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, the Swiss Army knife here on the show. He can do everything. Kyle, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, the more we talk about this Texans game, the more I think it could be really interesting for the Titans on Sunday, not only just from an injury standpoint, like Kyle pointed out there, but just Even though the Texans are 1-4, they still got some weapons offensively that I think really scare you or keep you up at night if you're a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, the Texans are going to win some games. They are somewhat a product of their schedule. It doesn't mean that they – I mean, we talked to Aaron Reese earlier. They haven't played well. They're not what they were hoping to be this year. Sometimes you do get that bump, though, too, from the coaching change. I think that's a good point on the OC. So Bill O'Brien, it's one of those kind of acts of desperation for a guy who's about to get fired. He takes over the play calling, and Watson handled it with such class. But that can't be easy for him to deal with that. So now he's got his OC, those guys like Romeo Crennel, and will play for him this year. And they are going to beat some teams. They're not going to be like a 4-12 team. I can't see it. He's too good on his own, and he has weapons. So there's a lot of reason to look at this game and be concerned if you're a Titans fan.
When we come back, a lot of people down on the Vols this week after their loss against Georgia. I'll tell you why. I really don't buy it. I think they're going to be just fine. We'll tell you why that is when we come back from the break. But first, make sure, Titans fans, you're there at Corner Pub to check out the game with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown, and great beer specials, including $1 off of Yazoo and Happ & Harry's draft beers, plus Happ & Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub downtown location this Sunday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 9:30 to 11:30 prior to the Titans taking on Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN The Game Nashville has your coverage of the MLB playoffs presented by Gary Force Acura. Tonight on 102.5 The Game, catch Game 4 of the NLCS Series as the Braves go up against the LA Dodgers. Coverage begins at 6:30. First pitch at approximately 7:08 p.m. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, talking some Vols. And Joe, I've seen some Vol Twitter people a little bit down on Tennessee this week, given their loss to Georgia. Got away from them in the second half. Georgia defensively just looked really strong on that side of the ball. And it got me thinking, like, have Tennessee fans maybe adjusted their expectations for this group as they head for the rest of this season? I actually feel better about it now than I did heading into this season. You know, I think we said 6-4 was right around the line that we were expecting from the Vols this season. You look ahead now, and with Georgia aside, and obviously knowing Alabama still on the schedule as well, other than those two teams, there's a lot of flaws in this league right now. There's not really teams outside of those two, I think, that really just scare the daylights out of you. Like Florida's offense, they're really good. Kyle Trask, Kyle Pitts, that crew, they're going to put up some points. Defensively, I mean, Florida's been pretty abysmal through the first 3 weeks of the season. You look at Auburn, I think Auburn's been really unimpressive for the most part. And Texas A&M, you never really know what you're going to get out of them either. So, you know, you've got some of these games like this weekend against Kentucky that are interesting matchups for Tennessee, and we'll see whether or not they're able to handle that and move to 3-1. But I think if you're Tennessee and you're a Vols fan looking at the rest of the schedule, outside of Alabama, I'm not sure there's really anybody left that you're just really concerned to play at this point. Not saying they're going to win all those games, but I'm saying you feel like you're going to be in the majority of these games moving down the rest of the schedule.
Speaking of Vol Twitter, 5 interviews with different Vol Twitter members today.
Wow.
Very exciting for something to come later. But, yeah, I think that this weekend will tell a lot on that. I agree with everything you just said. I do look at Texas A&M now and how they played in that game, because sometimes teams figure it out. I mean, if Texas A&M and Vanderbilt, if Vanderbilt could play, were to play again, it probably wouldn't be a 17-12 game.
Probably
not. They've figured some things out. Also, Texas A&M, I mean, Dan Mullen, you know, mentioned this in his press conference. Like, they actually have a home field thing going. I think all SEC teams do to some extent. But that,
there are a lot of people there.
That felt like it. You know, that felt
a lot
like
of people in Georgia too.
And that's right. And so that's a trip for, right? Or am I wrong about that?
A&M's at home. They're going to Auburn.
Okay, then never mind. So scratch that whole thought I just had. All right. But I do think Auburn, A&M, these teams could still beat them for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There's honestly, to me, there's one game that the rest of the schedule where you're just like, you would have to do some extraordinary out-of-body stuff to win, and that would be Alabama. But this is a program game to me, Saturday, okay? And they did it last year, but this has to be the norm now. You have to handle your South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt business if you're Tennessee. I think before you start really thinking about challenging Georgia, Florida, and being that team, you got to handle that business and know you're going to handle it. And this is not going to be a gimme. I think Kyle Tucker brought up something I've thought the same thing. There must be some kind of a just a mental thing with Tennessee because they never beat Tennessee. And it's a good point. 2 years ago, they were coming off that huge downer losing to Georgia. But that team, it's like the best Kentucky team I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Guys who are in the league right now, prominent guys in the league. And, you know, Pruitt's first team, which was okay, but not great by any means. Is, you know, in the trenches, that team was substandard, and they just blew them out. So, that's last year was, I thought, a huge win for that season. That was one of the biggest wins of the season, and it got Garantano back as the starting quarterback. I know some Vols fans don't like that, but it was the better move, and it led to them winning more after that. He's a better option than Maurer or Shout. So this is a handle your business, show that you can come off a game like that, and the highs and lows of the one half and then a terrible half and losing to Georgia again, and just show that you're superior to Kentucky. You know, run the ball.
Yeah.
Run the ball.
Yeah, I would expect a much larger commitment to running the ball this weekend from Tennessee than we saw against Georgia. And look, I mean, Kentucky, they've got a nice defensive line, and I don't want to take anything away from them. Their line and Georgia's line do not compare. So if you're Tennessee, you feel a lot better about that heading into this game. And look, this is a game Tennessee should win. I realize Kentucky is talented, and I think it will be close, but this is a game Tennessee should win. And then you kind of forecast the rest of their schedule. Like, I don't think 7-3 is crazy. Like, I really don't. And I know some people probably would after that Georgia game and the way they just got blown off the line of scrimmage in the second half of that game. But I think Tennessee is right there in the pack with some of these teams outside of Georgia and Alabama. And I would even still put Florida probably a notch ahead of Tennessee at this point until I visually with my eyes see Tennessee go out there and beat them. But I think these Auburn, Texas A&M games that they've got added to their schedule on the West, those are going to be like almost pick 'em games, in my opinion. I think that they're right there with those teams. And if you can squeak out one of those games, but I think they've got an opportunity to win both of those games. I don't think 7-3 is off the table. I really don't.
Oh, that would be a great season. I mean, there's no way around. That would be a great season. It's last week it was a commenter on I wrote about the offensive line against Georgia, and someone was like, 7-3 is absolutely unacceptable, you know. And I was like,
what?
No, it's not. Come on. Got to be realistic here. I mean, I understand at halftime you can let your mind wander if you're a Vols fan when you're up in that game and you're like, you have the goal line stand, like, this is it. And then such a downer after that. But, yeah, overall, big picture, if this team goes 7-3, it would be a heck of a season. Team identity is something that gets talked about a lot in football. And I think everyone says that, or in any sport, you know, we got to find our identity. It's a massive cliche in sports. And sometimes it's just not that simple. But I do think with this team it's simple. Your identity is mash people. I'll go to my grave saying that Jim Chaney did not give it enough of a try against Georgia, not knowing what would have happened if he did, but I think it would not have been the blowout outcome that we saw. From here on out, and Alabama included, take your guys who are some elite guys and let them do what they like to do best and take those backs. And especially, I think Eric Gray is a guy who – I do think he's an NFL player in the future. Got to get him more opportunities. Do that.
Have they reached the point where he needs to be the lead back? They've been kind of splitting carries between him and Ty Chandler. And look, I think Ty Chandler's a really good player, but I think the upside for Eric Gray is just higher. Like, have they reached the point where they need to feature Eric Gray a little bit more than they have.
Yeah, but I also will say this, that what I was just talking about, which is power football, it actually suits Chandler more. And I think that's the dilemma. I mean, he is a good fourth quarter, tired defense, yep, run right at you back. Better than Eric Gray. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you have a guy who can hit a home run, then I think you got to give him more chances to do it. So that's going to be that's tough. I mean, that's tough for them, I'm sure, you know, to decide. And if you're doing it on pass pro based on last week, they both can be better there.
Yeah.
So, again, though, put yourself in third and two and imagine how much better Garantano plays if he has a running game that's operating at a high level. I think it will the rest of the year.
I think it will, too. And even against, I mean, if you're looking down the schedule here in Alabama, I think that was a game maybe you thought if you're Tennessee, you'd struggle to match up on the line there and move the ball. I mean, Ole Miss moved the ball pretty much at will on Saturday. And look, I don't think that's what Bama's defense is. I think they're going to be better than that as they move ahead here. I just think Lane Kiffin did a really good job of executing a game plan on Saturday night. But I still think that Alabama, even at full strength on their defense, it's not as strong as that Georgia defense was. And I think you'll be able to move the ball.
It's not. It's also such a different matchup. Yeah, like you said. I mean, that's the thing. Can Tennessee line up and run right at those guys? I think Bama would prefer the team to play that way against them, right? I don't know the answer to that. But, again, just like with Georgia, do it anyway. Like, make sure. Make sure you can't, because you know you can't go laterally on Georgia, and you don't want to put everything on Garantano, and you shouldn't have to.
And, you know, in this Kentucky game, I'm interested to see. I mean, they're probably going to try to stack the box and see if Garantano can beat them through the air. I mean, that's going to be the game plan for a lot of defenses down the stretch here. Can he bounce back after a tough second half last week? A lot of it was the protection, absolutely. No question about that. But there were some decisions he made in the game that just were not good. And can he respond and bounce back this week from a decision-making standpoint and make the right plays? He's not going to make every throw. I think we know that about him at this point. But from a decision-making standpoint, the first couple of weeks, I thought he was really good in that area. A step back a week ago, can he respond against Kentucky?
Yeah, he's going to have to. And, you know, Josh Palmer, too. I think it's obvious that Georgia adjusted to that, but keep trying to get him the ball. He's looking like a really good player who can make plays for you downfield and a guy who's going to play on Sundays.
When we come back, how have the Titans been able to turn their culture around from one of the worst in the league to a winning culture so quickly? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.